Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another The One-Liner podcast from the Edinburgh International Film Festival. Hi, I'm Scott Morris, and over there is Drew Tamdale.
Hello.
A packed programme today, if by packed programme you mean five films. First off, we will be talking about Follow the Master, which I gather is about a guy walking. Drew, would you care to tell us more?
Not really, but I will, simply because I wish to vent my spleen before moving on to rather more enjoyable films. Now this film, and that's if you can even call it a film, is so bad it makes me angry. And it's probably the closest I've ever come to walking out of a cinema before the end of a film. And I mean, that's something I've never done in my entire life, right?
Yeah, it's not a good sign, is it?
No, due to its phenomenal dullness, and that was only after 10 minutes. I was really struggling to last that long.
Now that's really not a good sign, is it?
Astonishingly, I've already said that. It was made even worse by being preceded by two utterly terrible short films. And I will mention these because of their awfulness and just to make sure anybody thinking of seeing this at the festival is utterly put off. The first one, one of them, Aquarium, was an interview with a mixed race couple who travelled to South Africa to visit relatives during the apartheid. And it boils down to, South Africa in the 1980s was a bit shit, really. I kind of knew that. I think most people kind of knew that.
What a startling insight.
Yeah, it had not the slightest bit of insight or merit, and it was quite the most pointless short I've ever seen. But the other short just blew out of the water in terms of awfulness. It was called Sindie. I'm not quite sure that pronunciation right, my Latin's a bit lacking. By Matt Hulse, the director of Follow the Master. And it's one of, if not the worst short I've ever seen, possibly only challenged by that short that we saw last year of some people sitting about for a bit.
Riveting as it was.
Yes, if you haven't blocked that awful memory from your mind. But it's 4 minutes of sped up, incredibly grainy black and white footage of Matt Hulse variously walking round and round a rock, round and round some other things, up and around a slightly raised bit of land, and his head as he moved from a prone to sitting position. And then it ended.
Well, doesn't that just sound like art? If by art you mean bollocks.
And I do, so yes, it's art. So, those dispensed with, on to Follow the Master. And the premise of that is that Matt, his girlfriend Lucy, and their dog Tippy have travelled to the south of England to walk the South Downs Way and make a film as a tribute to Matt's grandpa Eric, who died last year. Now, apparently Eric, a vet, loved the South Downs Way, but we never get any idea of why, because we're shown approximately bugger all of the countryside, and what we are shown, largely some cows, some trees, some mud, and some barbed wire, could be absolutely anywhere. And when we're being shown shots of cows, trees, and mud, it's only when we're not being shown shots of people's feet. There are lots of these. Shots of dogs' feet. Close-ups of people's faces, and I mean, sort of, so you can see their eye and their cheekbone close. Hmm. And other inane things, like poor quality videos of two thick Belgians Matt and Lucy met on their travels. And I do mean thick. Once they're talking about having met Matt and Lucy, recounting their surprise that they met the couple a second day in a row, despite the fact they were walking the same fucking route. And another time, the woman Belgian asks, in all earnestness, if all of these motorways and dual carriageways are really necessary. There are also irritating, incredibly self-indulgent sequences of Matt putting himself on camera, filming himself air drumming to overdub music on the soundtrack. And talking of the soundtrack, it apparently seemed appropriate to him that their pilgrimage and tribute to Eric be regularly accompanied by ominous high-pitched alarm sounds bearing no relation to anything happening on screen.
You know what? This is starting to sound like art.
No, I don't think it qualifies as art. Sometimes art can actually have some value. This doesn't. Yeah, oh, and it regularly, and for no appreciable reason, cuts to scenes shot in black and white and shaky 8mm film. For because... I mean, they can't even deliver on the festival brochure's guide of the world's most adorable dog. I mean, it's an alright dog. That's it. And I passed at least three more adorable dogs on my way home today. And it just makes me angry. It's so terrible. It utterly fails as a tribute to a loved relative. It fails as a travelogue, given that it shows sod all of the countryside Grandpa Eric supposedly loved. And it simply fails outright as a film. The one success it's had, though, this may shock you, is that it's pulled off the great feat of managing to be even worse than last year's Atrocity the Third Pint.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Oh, it is. Trust me. While the bloke in the Third Pint was just annoying and stupid, unless quite how objectionable he was has been softened somewhat by time, Matt Hollis is a prick. I'm sorry to use such intemperate language, but he is. He clearly believes himself to be talented, witty and funny, but he's none of those, and particularly not funny. No, he's just a prick whose shitty film ruined my day. So, please, 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 people out there, avoid like the plague.
I think it's achieved at least one other thing. It's elevated your blood pressure through the roof.
Yes, I needed help with that because I'm not angry normally.
Calm the rage. Calm the rage.
It's all right, I have alcohol in hand to help with that. I did see this at 9 o'clock in the morning. It did ruin my day. It was a bad. I saw two really good films after that day, and it still made me angry. Grr! Ox smash puny film.
I think for all our sakes, we better move on to better films before you have an aneurysm and explode.
Which I'm in danger of doing. I'm absolutely apoplectic because of that film being so terrible and so without merit. Okay, let's move on, shall we? We'll move on then to a Serbian film called Goodbye, How Are You? So, we both saw this, but did you have a better time with that than I did with Follow the Master?
Certainly did. It had a lot better shorts in front of it, I think, although, to be honest, calling it a shorts maybe a bit lacks nomenclature. At 37 minutes, it's a proper show.
They mistakenly stuck a television programme in front of it.
Yeah, yeah. I'll stick with calling it a short, but why I don't speak Serbian is basically a fairly short tale about the decline in use of the Serbian language after the atrocities in the last little Balkans conflict. It appears that just using the language has become a reminder of that horrible time, and it's as such it's led to a generation of young Serbs having no real connection to their culture.
Yeah, so just to point out, to be clear, this was particularly the case in Kosovo, which is where that was about. Just to put that in context, it's in Kosovo where particularly the language of Serbians become a rather dirty thing.
Sure, read the film recounts someone being murdered simply for speaking it, which was a bit harsh. It's a harrowing little tale, and it is certainly worth seeing, and certainly something I hadn't been previously aware of, so in that respect it's very good. If I'm going to be harsh about it, it's possibly too long for a short film. It does actually repeat itself quite a bit. Indeed, they tell the same story twice from essentially the same perspective, which just seems to be padding, and there's other shots of, not sure refugee camps is exactly the right term to use it, but shots like that, which just feel like padding. It just feels like it's trying to make it longer for no appreciably good reason, and you could have cut that out quite easily and make it have exactly the same effect.
Yeah, it was certainly quite enlightening. I mean, I never really thought too much before about the idea of language being used as a sort of tool of subjugation, effectively.
Yeah.
And it's certainly interesting, lightning from that point of view. I would say I mentioned it being a TV program because that's rather what it felt like, actually. Yeah. I think taking 7-8 minutes out, but it would feel very much like a sort of half-hour program you might see on BBC4. I think it's probably better suited to that, actually, but certainly it's worth watching because it's really quite interesting.
Yes, I'd imagine how that will be how people wind up seeing it if they do. It's not the sort of thing that's ever going to show up in too many cinemas.
I can see something like BBC 4 or something like that doing it quite likely to do it.
I suspect the same thing might happen with Goodbye, How Are You, the main feature, as it were, but it's still only about 60-odd minutes, so it's probably going to show up more frequently on DVD or telly, I would think. And I very much enjoyed Goodbye, How Are You, but I don't really have too much to say about it. It's billed as a satirical documentary fairy tale. And saying that it has anything approaching a narrative would be something of a stretch, or probably a lie would be better. It's a loosely linked series of aphorisms from an unseen narrator overlaid on a background of news footage of the Serbian conflicts and shots of the still ravaged land and the poor people of the country. Apparently it's based on old news footage and 400 apparently unique satirical documentary shots filmed on a 3-year trip around the Balkan backroads. It is the only film I've ever seen with credits for an aphorism consultant. And
how you get that job, I've no idea. But
it sort of bounces about between harrowing images and absolutely absurd images. It's often very, very funny. It has a world-weary narration that just drips with cynicism, and I think that's probably why I like it, because it's almost a Serbian version of me narrating it.
Yeah, I feel similar myself, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I can't really say too much more about it, because it is just a series of witticisms overlaid over news footage and the like, but it's very enjoyable and it's very good.
Yeah, it's really quite funny, and just a few of the things the narrator said which particularly stuck in mind that really amused me. He's talking, there's a section particularly talking about political protests, that sort of thing. Paraphrasing René Descartes, when he says, "I think, therefore I am, in your files." I know a couple that are stuck in mind that are worth mentioning, just to, so people get an idea of what sort of humour's in this film. The protesters viciously attacked with their backs the sticks of the surprised policemen. And the police fired warning shots into the air. Several flying demonstrators were shot.
It's very interesting. If you get a chance to see it, I'd highly recommend it. If you want some more of a taster, there's actually the first 5 minutes online. If you go to the website at www.dribblingpictures.com, and while it is all in, it was either Russian or Serbian.
Serbian.
I would have thought so. Looked like the Russian flag, I forget. But there's if you click through there...
Russian flag, same colour, I think, so that's perhaps why.
Yeah, but certainly if you have a stumble around that website, it's fairly obvious to navigate, although you won't be in English, but they do have the first 5 minutes with the subtitled version on there. And I'd highly encourage anyone to go and have a look for it. I'll try and get a direct link to it in the show notes. Absolutely. That, at least, is worth 5 minutes of your time, and I would say the whole film is as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So, next up, Exam. And if there's one way to make me ignore a film, it's to say it's a horror. If there's one way to ensure I'll ignore it, it's to say it's a British horror. But that's what the festival guide says of Exam. Is that accurate?
Does it? I think they were on some sort of wacky tobacco that day or something, because it's certainly not a horror. Yeah, it does. This impressive Brit horror, despite being in no way horrific.
Well, we've come to know that from the lie book, but, well, set them straight, Drew.
I'm just always a loss of words of just how incredibly wrong that is. It makes no sense. I can only assume they didn't watch it. Well, fortunately, I did, so I will set you straight. This film's it's more in the mould of Fermat's Room or Cube, neither of which I think you could describe as horror films, where a group of strangers are trapped in a situation they must work together to escape from. Well, director Stuart Hazeldine's debut feature involves a group of 8 people who have made it through to the final round of recruitment, which is a competitive exam, for a top job at a shady corporation. It's set in the near future, or as the film rather ominously puts it, simply soon. Large numbers of healthy young people have been dying from a virulent viral pandemic, and a job with access to discounted antiviral drugs is highly prized. The invigilator, Colin Salmon, informs the candidates that they have 80 minutes to provide one answer to one question. But when they turn their papers over, rather irritatingly and inconveniently, there is no question. So the candidates then must work together to work out the question. And are you seeing the lack of horror here? Thriller might be appropriate, but horror? No. Anyway, the events play out in real time. No mention's made of that in the thing, but I timed it against my watch, and it is, so... the events play out in real time as the characters' various abilities, prejudices and motives for applying for the job are revealed. Now, half the fun of the film's in trying to work out what the question is, or to at least think of ways in which the characters can work it out, and that is really rather enjoyable. And also, I suggest you pay attention from the beginning, as you may well be able to work out a substantial piece of the puzzle for yourself. I did, and pathetically, really rather pathetically, I feel rather proud of myself for doing so. Yes, thank you, but this did follow the master, so I'm actually quite proud of myself for being able to concentrate on it at all instead of just punching walls. The other half of the pleasure of the film is from watching the characters try to double cross and outwit each other. And the acting is for the most part pretty decent, and it's pretty tightly plotted thanks to its use of real time. It's not without its flaws. The production could do with a little more gloss, as it feels a bit like a television programme rather than a feature film. And it probably needs to respect the intelligence of its audience a little more, rather than explaining what's happened after a few mysteries of the room they're in has been revealed. And all in, though, it's really very enjoyable, and it's a pretty promising debut from Stuart Hazeldine.
Cool stuff. Yeah, sounds actually very interesting. I'll have to catch up with it. The hot in Hollywood British screenwriter Stuart Hazeldine, who worked on Knowing and The Day the Earth Stood Still.
According to the EIFF guide, he worked on Knowing. According to IMDb, he didn't.
was he working as a screenwriter, or was he perhaps T-Boy, or...?
Well, I'm assuming so, but he has no credit at all for knowing on his page in IMDb. So I'm currently going to believe IMDb and not believe the Book of Lies. I wait till one sorts itself out, so we know for certain.
I will have to catch up with that one. I hope that one gets a release fairly sharpish, because that sounds very interesting, despite having Jimmy Mystery in it.
Yeah, it's not without its flaws, I say, but it's...
I'm guessing one of them is Jimmy Mystery.
Well, flaw is not quite right for him, but it's part of some of the acting, the level acting is what makes it feel a bit more like a TV programme.
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's worth a watch, though, because it's interesting. And it's kind of like things like Cube and Fermat's Room, but with a different twist, because they're not all being chopped up or going to be folded up inside a room at any point.
Yes, at no point does the room start shrinking after being pushed by hydraulic presses, that sort of thing.
Yep, that's it. Right, this being the Edinburgh International Film Festival, we've tried to get around as many different countries as possible, see what their film output is like. So now we move on to Germany. Scott, tell us about the German film. That's the German film.
The German
film. Only the one.
It's a bit like Macbeth, can't actually say the name, got called Scottish. Yeah. Right, The Architect is the German film. I don't really know what's going on with the sort of art house end of German cinema. I can only assume we've done as much damage to their culture as we did to Japan's during World War II. However, rather than have it break out into cases of giant lizards and used panty vending machines, you get what can only be described as some very, very strange family dramas that I hope is in no way representative of the average German family. Otherwise, that country's in very poor shape indeed. The architect of which we speak, Georg, finds himself back in his childhood home to attend the funeral of his mother. He brings back his wife, Eva, and his two kids, but it's not long before buried secrets start rising from the surface to the benefit of no one in particular. And indeed, given the sort of secret that actually is, I wonder why hiding it was ever deemed a good idea in the first place. Turns out he has another child by another woman in the village, a childhood sweetheart, and this revelation, which has been hidden from his wife previously, causes an understandable strain on the relationships, although the way that they choose to deal with this is pretty much as weird as the individual family members themselves. I don't really want to go into the details of what shakes out, because the plot itself is rather ordinary, and it's the character traits and what they do that actually makes this a worthwhile film to watch. They are, to a man-jack, quirky peeps. And I mean quirky in the sense of really creepy and weird, not zany and offbeat.
Yes, watching this, I was very much reminded of that quote from South Park, the movie, where I think Stan asks, possibly Ken, it matters not, dude, what the fuck is wrong with German people? And it kept coming back to me all the way through this.
Yeah, it's a strange atmosphere. You do never feel that you're more than a few seconds away from something extraordinarily inappropriate happening. And it's this well-tended atmosphere of social discomfort. It never actually breaks out into anything particularly uneasy. It's to the betterment of the story that it's there, giving it some form of edge, especially because, that aside, there's not an awful lot else in the film. It's not particularly visually impressive or interesting. The acting is good, and the direction to keep this atmosphere up has to be top-notch as well. It's an interestingly constructed film, and it's entertaining in a kind of curate's egg sort of way. It's certainly different from so many other films that I've seen that it's worth watching on that basis alone. I can't actually say it's an enjoyable film to watch, but it's sort of strange enough to be entertaining.
Yeah, there's no obvious point, but yeah, it's interesting. At no point was I bored. I don't know, yes, well, what kind of weird stuff are they going to do now? Don't do that. Oh, what's going on? You're weird. What the? Yeah, no point bored, though. I definitely found it interesting. So it's, yeah, well worth a watch.
Yeah, Germans are weird, man. I'm sure it can't... No, it must just be the films that we see. It can't. The country can't be like that. They'd never survive.
You'd have thought not. You know, if they were regularly getting up to sort of stuff to get up to this film, they would never produce good cars, for instance.
Aye, so a strange film, but it's I don't know. We've seen enough better films that I can't say it's been a film of the festival to go and seek out if you're on a budget or just have the time to see umpteen different films, but it's pretty decent. I'll give it that small pleasure. One film which I hear is better than decent, though, is Moon, which I will hand over to Drew for.
Yeah, this is definitely something I really, really enjoyed and had been looking forward to for a while. This is another British film, although American stars and it looks like American film, though it is British, British director. In the future, our energy problems apparently will be solved by harvesting lovely, clean helium-3 from the dark side of the moon.
I love helium-3.
Using Future Technology 4, naturally.
I love Future Technology 4.
The only problem is, though, that somebody human has to be up there on the moon to do it. Enter Sam, played by Sam Rockwell, who's on a 3-year contract to maintain the moon base and the harvesters. And if only they'd called the wonder fuel Tiberium instead of Helium 3, because every time they mentioned harvesters and every time you saw harvester, all I could think of was Command and Conquer. But yeah, he's on a 3-year contract and he's separated from his wife and daughter and able only to communicate with them by a recorded video message. Now, Sam's only companion is Gertie, voiced by Kevin Spacey, a one-eyed computer in charge of the base systems. You may think you know where this is going, you know. Its eye is black, not red, and has a screen displaying emoticons to show its mood, but the suggestion's clear. I mean, all may not be as you think. I don't suggest one way or the other, but we'll see. As he nears the end of his contract, Sam starts getting a little stir-crazy and begins to hallucinate, though the visions he sees are nothing compared to what he's about to experience as his world and his mind begin to fall apart. Now, and given that, bar the occasional video call and Gertie, it's only ever the character Sam on screen. Moon needs a very, very capable actor to make it work and to carry all the dramatic work on his own. And fortunately, Sam Rockwell, one of the most charismatic actors in Hollywood, and she pointed out star of one of the oneliner.com's top 10 films of last year in Choke, is very much up to the task. He's truly compelling to watch and makes Sam's emotional breakdown believable, touching and riveting to watch. To back up Sam Rockwell's impressive performance, there's a Clint Mansell soundtrack, Darren Aronofsky's regular collaborator, which at first feels a bit overbearing, but then becomes quite a good mood setter of the sort of loneliness and weirdness of Sam's situation. And it's really a very good film. It's worthy of being a Philip K. Dick or Isaac Asimov story, a short story perhaps. It certainly has that sort of feel to it, and I would consider that fairly good praise. I just wanted any fans of Mark Berry not to get excited about seeing his name in the credits, though, because he may as well not to be in it, because he plays a straight role on the end of a video phone, and you can barely tell it's him. So it's rather a waste of Mark Berry, I'm afraid. At no point will he ask for whiskey in an amusing fashion. The other thing to note is that there's also a very assured direction from first-time helmer Duncan Jones, who, until now, has been best known as offspring of the legendary David Bowie. But unfortunately, after Moon, I'm sure he's going to make a solid name for himself in the film business.
Wuzza.
That's largely what I have to say about that just now. Have you any questions?
No questions, apart from when's it coming out? It's one film that I really have to see. Quite upset that I'd slept through it instead. Sam Rockwell, fabulous. Even the films that I don't like where Sam Rockwell's in it, I always like Sam Rockwell in it. I mean, I wasn't a massive fan of The Assassination of Jesse James, but you know, he's great in it. Joke's fabulous. Things, older stuff like Matchstick Men.
Matchstick Men, welcome. Great to Hollywood. Stuff. He's good in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, is another one who plays the lead. And he's particularly strong in that too.
Yeah.
Even Charlie's Angels, so he's not got much of a part, but at least he's probably by far the most interesting thing on screen.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to overcome the McG factor.
I think we've said enough about McG, I think, in recent podcasts. We don't need to go back in. I don't need to open that wound up again.
For those who might not be able to catch Moon at the film festival, would like to see it though, it's going to be released in the UK, according to IMDb anyway, on the 17th of July. Shouldn't have long to wait.
Fabulous. I'll certainly be in line for that. And I guess that's it for this episode then. Any other business? No?
Nothing on the agenda.
If business is concluded, then we'll table this motion and see you in a couple of days when we come back with some reviews of more films, I guess.
Just to be a bit different.
Yeah, just for something different. I think we'll probably put one up on Monday evening and we'll be talking about Antichrist, which is possibly the most controversial film at this festival. So I'm looking forward to that in some form or another. Looking forward / dreading that film.
Yes. The only upside I would consider is that I had been dreading Lars von Trier's Dogville. It seeming to be, from the trailers, one of the most ridiculous and pretentious films ever made, and absolutely loved it. One of the best endings to a film in recent memory.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it pulls another Dogville on me. But we'll see in a couple of days' time.
Yep, fingers crossed. Until then, I've been Scott Morris, and he has been
Luke Avondale.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll be right back. Where large numbers of healthy young people have been dying from a very... Excuse me. Large numbers of healthy young people have been dying from a very... fail. Try again. Large numbers of healthy young people have been dying from a very... I can't say virulent... Oh, wait, I said it. Bugger.
Play one, I'll sort it in post.